Good evening and welcome to this extended Friday edition of the KRFP Evening Report for October 6th, 2023. On today's show, we'll hear extended excerpts from two Moscow League of Women Voters candidates forums held this week, one for the Moscow City Council candidates and the other for Moscow School Board candidates, plus four top Idaho Attorney General's Office officials are leaving their jobs. And the Idaho Attorney General's Office issues an opinion on opioid settlement money, saying that it can only go to people who suffer from opioid addiction and not for other addiction issues, something that may hurt recovery centers in the state. Also, Washington Governor Jay Inslee asks for FEMA funds to help the victims of the Gray and Oregon fires, which devastated parts of Spokane County in August. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. But first, world headlines from FSN.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Nick Harper. U.S. President Joe Biden is being strongly criticized for moving ahead with building parts of a wall at the country's southern border, despite a campaign promise not to. Mexico's president, though, says he doesn't see it happening. FSN's Caroline Malone reports from Washington.
The Mexican president Andrés Manuel López Obrador said on Friday the U.S. government doesn't want to build a new wall on its border and that he doubted the planned construction would be carried out. Well, that despite the White House confirming they would be moving forward on building parts of the wall because the money had already been appropriated by Congress and they couldn't legally change that. Border crossings between the U.S. and Mexico have surged since COVID-19 pandemic laws, known as Title 42, blocking people from entering, were lifted. Border crossing agents picked up more than 200,000 people just last month, the largest ever number.
The Nobel Peace Prize has gone to Iranian activist Narges Mohammadi. The committee praised what they called her fight against the oppression of women in Iran, as FSN Stuart Smith reports.
The Nobel Committee describes Mohammadi as an advocate for equality and human rights, a campaigner against the use of the death penalty, and a leader of last year's women's rights protests against the government in Iran. Currently behind bars, she's been convicted 5 times, arrested 13, and in total sentenced to 31 years in prison for multiple charges, including spreading propaganda against the state. The head of the Norwegian Nobel Committee says he hopes Iranian authorities will release her so she may accept the award in December.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump is endorsing Congressman Jim Jordan's bid for Speaker of the House of Representatives. Congress's lower chamber has been paralyzed this week after Kevin McCarthy was ousted from his role by members of his own Republican Party. Ever since Benji Hire reports.
Posting on his Truth Social account, Donald Trump said the Ohio representative would make a great speaker. Trump's own name had been floated by some members, but despite being intrigued and flattered by the idea of taking the gavel, he insists he's entirely focused on running for the Oval Office again. His endorsement, though, could go a long way for Jim Jordan as he tries to fill the vacant seat of power and take control of a rudderless House. Republican Majority Leader Steve Scalise has also thrown his hat in the ring, having long eyed the position. Whoever goes for it has an almighty task of actually getting the votes to win, something that took McCarthy 15 attempts back in January, and they'll face the challenge of governing a deeply rifted legislature. Benji Hire, Washington.
Business and the US added more than 330,000 jobs last month, considerably higher than expected. The latest U.S. Labor Department data, though, could push the Federal Reserve to continue interest rate hikes for longer. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Four top staffers in Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador's office are leaving their jobs, according to an email the Idaho Capital Sun obtained, written by Labrador Solicitor General Theo Wold and Labrador's Chief of Staff Tim Frost are leaving their posts. The Idaho Statesman reported Civil and Constitutional Defense Division Chief Lincoln Davis Wilson is resigning, and the Idaho Press reported Labrador's Communications Director Beth Cahill is resigning. Labrador told the Idaho Press today the reasons the people are leaving are unrelated. He said, "I hired some of the most talented people in the state of Idaho, and they are very successful, highly ambitious, and they're very coveted." The departures come after a fired deputy attorney general filed a wrongful termination suit against the attorney general's office last month. Labrador wrote in an email that Wold's last day is today, and he will train to be a commissioned intelligence officer in the U.S. Air Force Reserves. Labrador said Frost's last day will be Saturday, October 14th. Before becoming Idaho's first Solicitor General under Labrador, Wold, who lives in Boise, worked for the Trump administration as Acting Assistant General in the Justice Department and as a Deputy Assistant to the President. He also worked as Chief Deputy Counsel to Republican U.S. Senator Mike Lee of Utah on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Labrador wrote, "Deputy Solicitor Josh Turner will serve as interim Solicitor General while Labrador looks for a permanent replacement." Labrador wrote, "Deputy Attorney General Phil Skinner will now be his chief of staff." In the months after Labrador took over as Attorney General in January, six of the eight top attorneys in his office assigned to the Idaho Health and Welfare Department quit or were fired. An opinion from the Idaho Attorney General's office is expected to make it more difficult for the state to use opioid settlement money to fund recovery center activities around the state. The Idaho Capital Sun says it obtained Deputy Attorney General Stephanie Guyon's opinion issued August 31st after the Idaho Behavioral Health Council requested the opinion. Behavioral health specialists say the Attorney General's office's reading of the federal guidelines is unusually strict in that it says the money can only be spent on people with opioid use disorders and not other addictions. Deputy Attorney General Guyon's opinion says if opioid settlement funds are used to support these recovery centers, procedures must be established to ensure that the opioid settlement funds are only used to serve individuals suffering from opioid use disorder. Because of that, if the money was used to form recovery centers, it would be extremely difficult to parse out which money would be used for opioid recovery and that which would be used for other types of substance use disorders or mental health conditions. However, other states use the money to treat substance use disorders that are not from opioids. The National Conference of State Legislatures reports Colorado uses the money for housing vouchers for people with any substance use disorder, and San Francisco television station KQED reports the city of San Francisco used the settlement money to treat people who are addicted to stimulants such as methamphetamine and cocaine. Idaho Health Department spokesperson Monica Young told the Idaho Capital Sun, "While the full impacts of the Attorney General's opinion are not yet known, the opinion, if correct, will likely pose significant barriers to state and local government efforts to fund recovery centers and serve individuals suffering from opioid use disorders and related substance use disorders." Recovery Idaho Executive Director Norma Jaeger told the news outlet in a phone interview, "Any kind of requirements, particularly that require you to go through an intake, is going to make it difficult for people to access and make it less accessible for those services." Washington Governor Jay Inslee has filed a request with the Federal Emergency Management Agency for a major disaster declaration for people impacted by the Gray Fire and the Oregon Fire, which burned 450 primary homes in Spokane County August 18th and killed two people. The major disaster declaration would make money available through FEMA's Individual Assistance Program. Governor Inslee's 44-page letter to the Biden administration said it will cost more than $5 billion to repair all of the damage from the two wildfires in Spokane County. Inslee wrote, "This disaster has destroyed more primary homes than any other wildfire in Washington state history. Events of this severity and magnitude exceed the recovery capability of the state and impacted local governments, and supplemental federal assistance is required." Inslee also is requesting money for debris disposal and for keeping contaminants from the fires out of local waterways. Members of Congress from Eastern Washington issued a separate letter this week asking the Biden administration to grant Inslee's request. Republican Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers and Democratic Senators Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell wrote in a joint letter, "While Washington State's first responders have reacted to these disasters promptly and heroically, the events triggered by the Gray and Oregon Road fires are quickly exhausting the already strained capacity and resources of local communities and state agencies. Weather conditions have led to an above-normal fire risk for all of Washington State, due in large part to extreme heat, unprecedented dryness, and inclement weather, such as high wind. To date, there have been 1,855 fires and 155,503 acres burned, and the fire season is far from over." Whitman County Health Department workers are monitoring the algae bloom, which health officials have found in the Snake River from Nisqually John Landing to Wawawi County Park. A September 11th sample tested positive for toxins in the river, which are harmful to humans and wildlife, which prompted the health department to issue a public health alert because of a toxic algae bloom above Lower Granite Dam on the Snake River. Whitman County Health Inspector Maddie Lucas told the Daily News the department is testing the algal bloom every week, and they will lift the health alert after two consecutive tests show the algae is no longer toxic. The advisory warns people to not ingest water or swim or boat in the areas where blue-green blooms are visible. The health department says people who come into contact with the toxin or discolored or stinking water should wash with soap and clean water. According to a news release from Whitman County Public Health, pets and livestock should be kept away from the area and should not be allowed to drink the water. Dishes should be washed in clean water. Health officials advise river users boiling tainted water will not make it safe. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife has announced they will open the Lower Snake River for a coho salmon fishing season tomorrow. According to the Lewiston Tribune, the department said anglers may fish from the power lines which cross the river near West Evans Road, running west of Clarkston to the Idaho-Washington state line near Clarkston. The coho fishing season will run through October 31st. Fish and Wildlife has issued bag limits of 2 coho salmon per day, though people can take any number of jack salmon. Fishing is permitted from the Idaho-Washington state line to the Washington-Oregon state line, where fisher people will be limited to the same number of 2 fish per day. Pullman officials announced they have resumed using a previous method of hauling biosolids for processing. In September, the Pullman City Council changed the process for hauling waste when they ratified an emergency declaration because the State Department of Ecology was slow in renewing a permit for hauling waste to nearby agricultural land. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has fined Clearwater Forest Industries $23,950 because of Clean Water Act violations. Clearwater Forest Industries operates the Kuski Sawmill, which is located on the South Fork of the Clearwater River. According to the Lewiston Tribune, a news release from the EPA said inspectors identified 23 violations of excessive sediment rules for stormwater runoff. According to the release, industrial lumber facilities release runoff, which allows impurities such as wood shavings and oily lumber residues to pollute water. Spokane County Sheriff's Office says new details have emerged in a fatal shooting on Bonneville Power Administration property in Meade. The shooting occurred the morning of September 30th on the 2400 block of East Hawthorne Road, in which a security guard shot 2 people, one of whom died. The sheriff's office said a security guard approached 2 men who were trespassing on federal Bonneville Power Administration land where no trespassing signs were clearly visible. According to the report, an argument between the security guard and 48-year-old John Franklin escalated into a physical altercation leading to the shooting. According to witness accounts, the two men appeared to be aggressive towards the security guard and fought with him before the guard fired his weapon. The Spokane County Medical Examiner's Office said the dead man was identified as 48-year-old John Franklin, who died of a gunshot wound to his torso. Airway Motocross Park owner Josh Hitchens of Airway Heights told the Spokesman Review Franklin was a good guy, and his friend, who rode with at least one of his sons at the Airway Heights dirt bike track nearly every weekend. He said the area is a common place for motocross riders. Hitchens said, "He was here enough that it was impossible not to get to know him a little bit." Spokane County Sheriff's spokesperson Corporal Mark Gregory said the name of the second victim is being withheld because he was not charged with a crime. However, Hitchens said Brock Franklin was shot twice and is recovering at home. The sheriff's office wrote witnesses, the security guard, and Brock Franklin's statements all, quote, corroborated the main parts of what happened. We still continue to investigate to ensure the evidence and any other statements witnesses show the same. In a statement, Bonneville Power Administration spokesperson Kevin Wingert said, "The Bonneville Power Administration is aware of the incident occurring adjacent to a BPA facility on September 30th in Spokane, Washington, that involved a member of our contracted security force. We take very seriously the tragic loss of life and are fully cooperating with the Spokane County Sheriff's Office, which is leading the investigation." Hitchens said a fundraiser for the Franklin family is set for this weekend and the following weekend at Airway Motocross Park. He said a memorial ride celebrating John Franklin's life will take place next spring. And you're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by the Moscow Food Co-op, specializing in food, goods, and programs that nourish and nurture our community. The Moscow Food Co-op is located at 121 East 5th Street. For more information, visit moscowfood.coop, call 882-8537, or find them on Facebook.
A 24-year-old Moscow resident says he will run for the District 6 House seat held by Republican Lori McCann of Lewiston. Colton Bennett is hoping to outflank McCann on the right in next May's Republican primary after the Nez Perce, Latah, and Lewis County Republican Party Central Committees voted to reprimand McCann for not voting right-wing enough during this year's legislative session. Bennett is vice chair of the Latah County Republican Party Central Committee. He told the Daily News this week, "I really, truly believe that in no time in our republic's history have we been closer to losing the American that I love and value." He also said, "My values and my principles align incredibly well with the platform of my party." Bennett also told the Daily News he would stand for what he calls family values and conservative values and would be unapologetically against abortion and push for child support payments for mothers to start before a baby is born. Bennett said that will provide responsibility and help us communicate the importance of a father is not just when the child is born, it starts before that. Colton Bennett was one of three candidates for a six-year term seat on the Latah County Library District Board of Trustees this year. Bennett did not respond to a request for an interview before the May 16th election from KRFP. He got 1,526 votes compared to Wayne Schmidt, who won with 2,975 votes. During the library board election, Bennett wrote on the League of Women Voters 411 website he would use the library board seat as a platform to foster both truth and learning. He wrote he would manage taxpayer money with the utmost regard, adding every penny of the $1.7 million our library board manages is taxpayer money, no matter the source. That last statement from Bennett was seemingly contradicted by Saba Baig, who was an incumbent candidate running for another seat on the library board. Baig said in an interview with KRFP, some of the Latah County Library District's money comes from fundraisers. Bennett also wrote on the League of Women Voters 411 website in an answer to a question about the most significant challenge the library district faces, quote, "I believe the answer to this is a loss of trust. As I have traveled across the country and spoken with prospective voters, I have heard a recurring theme in their concerns. Some patrons have lost trust in our library system. Concerns include the caliber and quality of our literature, how we model literacy for our posterity, and how we are going to keep up with the technological demands of this decade. As a Latah County Library trustee, I will work to regain community trust for our library system. With your vote, I will seek to address these challenges with courage, integrity, and propriety." The Republican Central Committees, which are controlled by the far right in the three counties, objected to several of Representative Lori McCann's votes, and the 23-member Latah County Republican Party Central Committee, which includes former County Commission candidate Gabriel Wrench, voted to sanction McCann for five of her votes, including House Bill 314, which would have allowed parents and patrons to sue library districts and schools for up to $2,500 if they are found to have distributed material to a minor that lawmakers define as harmful. McCann also voted against overriding Republican Governor Brad Little's veto of the bill, and the bill did not become law. McCann spoke against the bill on the House floor in late March.
"I would submit to you that in this folder, every one of these are letters from high school students in my district that say, over and over, every single one of them except one says, 'Ma'am, what you are doing is you are limiting our access. You are limiting what we can and cannot read.' And they're saying, 'You have no idea what a young, I mean, they were thinking I wrote the bill. And but these students are saying, good people in the legislature, you are trying to legislate books that we are all reading, that we have read for many, many years. One young lady wrote me a letter that said, 'The Moscow Library saved my life.' That I was suicidal, that I went to the library and I talked to my librarian. She suggested some books in regard to transgenderism, which are many of the books that are objectionable to the body that I've been shown. Do I think those books should be in the hands of our young children? Absolutely not. Do I want my grandchildren to see those books? Absolutely not. But if I am 16 and 17 years old, I want to be able to read the classics."
That was Republican Representative Lori McCann of Lewiston speaking on the floor of the Idaho House March 20th. McCann has not as of yet announced plans to seek re-election to her District 6 House seat. The district includes all of Latah and Lewis counties and a rural part of Nez Perce County, plus a small section of Lewiston in the Lewiston Orchards neighborhood. Besides the library censorship bill, the Latah County Republican Party Central Committee voted to officially reprimand McCann for her vote against the law that takes away the freedom of Idahoans to have a safe workplace during a pandemic. House Bill 155, which Governor Brad Little signed, makes it illegal for employees to require a coronavirus vaccine as a condition of employment, and it also attacks culture by making it illegal to have a coronavirus vaccine condition for entry to a public venue. If another coronavirus were to hit with the severity of the recent COVID-19 pandemic, businesses that want to keep their workforces safe would have to close, and cultural events would likely not be able to take place safely with the prohibition of a vaccine mandate. Instead of commending McCann for voting against House Bill 155, the Latah County Republican Party Central Committee voted to reprimand her for it. The Latah County Republican Party Central Committee also voted to reprimand McCann for her vote against House Bill 265, which would have banned children from being present at drag shows, and that would have banned drag shows from occurring in public buildings. The bill, written by Idaho Family Policy Center President Blaine Canzati, would also allow parents or their offspring to sue for up to $10,000 if an underage member of their family witnessed part of a live drag show. The damages would be for psychological, emotional, economic, or physical harm suffered. The minor or the parents could sue up to 4 years after the incident. The language of the bill is vague as to what constitutes sexually explicit. During debate on the bill, Republican Representative Bruce Skog of Nampa smeared drag performers as perverts on the House floor by saying, "Really, this is simply a protect the children from perverts bill." The bill passed 48-21 in the House but did not advance in the Senate. The County Central Committee also voted to sanction McCann for her vote against House Bill 259, which would have prevented anyone except county clerks, election officials, election officers, or employees of the state from distributing absentee ballot applications. Despite questions about the need for such a bill and a statement from the Idaho Secretary of State's office that there is no widespread voter fraud in Idaho, the House passed it 47-22, but it did not move forward in the Senate. The Latah County Republican Party Central Committee also voted to sanction McCann for her vote against House Bill 273, which would have clarified that voters can reduce a jurisdiction's property tax budget via initiative or referendum. That bill passed in the House 36-33, but the Senate did not take it up. The Nez Perce County Central Committee voted to censure McCann in early April without giving McCann a chance to address the committee to respond to the charges, as she was in Boise, where the legislative session was wrapping up. The Lewis and Latah County Republican Party Central Committees did give McCann a chance to respond, but voted to sanction her anyway. The Latah County Republican Party Central Committee held their meeting on sanctioning McCann at the 1912 Center August 15th, attended by about 90 people. The Central Committee allowed registered Republicans who live in District 6 to speak. The Daily News reported at the time 10 people testified against sanctioning McCann and 9 people spoke in favor. Some in the crowd jeered Moscow resident Ben Beard, who testified on McCann's behalf, saying he has been a lifelong Republican and had been appalled and shocked by Idaho's Republican Party for the last 35 years. Beard said, "It's the voters' job to vote McCann out, not the Republican Party." Beard said, "To censure this woman, I'm sorry, this party is upside down. This is not how other Republicans treat other Republicans." Beard also said the Soviets had a central committee and the Communist Party in China had a central committee, and we do the exact same thing. Among the outbursts from the crowd was a man shouting, "Time's up, time's up." Also at the August 15th meeting, Christchurch deacon and 2020 Republican candidate for Latah County Commission Gabriel Wrench testified against McCann. Wrench said Republicans have lost their way and don't know what it means to be conservative anymore. Wrench said the library and drag show bills would be a hedge against what's happening in other states where conservatives are dealing with worse books and, quote, pornographic parades. He said those are bigger issues that could be coming to Idaho. Wrench said Republicans are so used to the shackles, we don't even know what freedom and liberty look like anymore. There's inconsistencies across Republicans, and I hope this process will bring back the Republican Party to its principles. The Idaho Capital Sun reported earlier in the summer, Wrench said at a national meeting of anti-abortion religious leaders in Georgia in July that he will work with Republican Idaho State Senator Scott Herndon of Sagal to write what the leaders call an equal protection bill, which would eliminate affirmative defenses for rape and incest in Idaho's abortion law. Wrench told an all-male panel of the group Operation Save America in Douglasville, Georgia, on July 21st, that many Mormon members of the Idaho legislature have taken the official church position that rape and incest exceptions to laws banning a woman's right to abortion care are not acceptable, and that Operation Save America endorsed Senator Herndon's bills that did not include the exceptions, did not move forward in the Idaho legislature. He said the Moscow-based Christ Church, which opposes women's rights, has engaged in what he calls smash-mouth incrementalism, which intends to make changes in law removing women's rights gradually. Wrench said he will work with Herndon on eliminating the rape and incest affirmative defense. You're tuned in to KRFP Moscow Pullman. This is the KRFP Evening Report.
KRFP thanks its listeners and supporters, including the Palouse Folklore Society, celebrating traditional music and dance on the Palouse since 1982. The Palouse Folklore Society sponsors concerts, jam sessions, and a monthly contra dance. Find out more at palousefolk.org or on Facebook.
One candidate for the Moscow School Board at last night's League of Women Voters Candidates Forum repeatedly said there were books in the district's school libraries that are sexually explicit. Zone 1 candidate Cody Barr did not mention any book titles, but he did say some books should be moved to an adults-only section. Barr is challenging three-term incumbent Jim Frenzel for the Zone 1 seat. Frenzel says he has complete confidence in the school district's libraries and their staff, and the decision about what children should not be allowed to read should be made by parents, not the school district. Barr and Frenzel were two of four candidates who appeared at the Moscow League of Women Voters Candidates Forum last night. The other two candidates were incumbent Dulcie Kirsting Lark and Gay Lynn Clyde, who are running for the Zone 3 seat. There are six candidates running for three open seats on the five-seat school board this year, but the league president explained since one of the candidates for the Zone 4 seat could not appear last night, the league would try to schedule another forum for the Zone 4 race later. The candidates for that seat are incumbent Don Fazio and challenger Jim Gray, who ran for mayor of Moscow in 2021. Zone 1, which Jim Frenzel represents, includes the part of the city of Moscow north of East D Street and east of North Main Street, plus a small section south of D Street that extends to East 3rd Street near downtown. It also includes part of the rural area of the school district northeast of Moscow, extending to Idler's Rest Road and Moscow Mountain. Frenzel says he has been part of the Moscow School District's mentor program for 13 years. His opponent, Toby Barr, said he moved to Moscow a year ago from Connecticut, where he served on the school board there. He said he homeschools his four children and says parents' trust in the school district is wavering. Here's all the comments about district library books Barr made across various questions from the moderator, including one question that specifically was about school libraries.
The other thing, too, that is part of my campaign, a major issue at the schools, in particular the high school, is the prevalence of graphic sexual literature in the library. And I think it's something that needs to be addressed. It is being addressed by, I know, committees, but if the committees there fail to act, then the board will be responsible for that. Not to beat the drum here, but I came to find out that there were certain books, and this issue was brought to me by somebody else, but we found that there were certain books here in the library that I knew weren't even in our school library in Connecticut, so I thought for sure they wouldn't be here in an Idaho school library, but found that to be the case. So another reason why I decided to run. I think it's important for us to make sure that parents are reassured that we're doing everything that we can to keep their kids safe and protect them from harmful materials. So I think a good solution to the books in the library would be some sort of rating system. You know, if there are books in there that are really intended for adults, then we should rate them as such. And when children check them out, when minors check them out, parents should be notified. I think that would be a good compromise. Again, I've talked to a number of parents as I've been campaigning and heard a number of stories. Parents who pulled their kids out of school because of bullying. Parents don't feel like they're being listened to. And I think we need to redouble our efforts to rebuild that trust. I don't have a doctorate, but I did earn a master's at a Christian university, and I was in the library all the time. I love libraries. I think that children and adults need to know how to use them and to use them well to access information. But again, I think that they're a place for learning, not for sexualization. And I think that the focus of libraries should be on, you know, how do you find the right sources for a scientific paper that you're writing? You know, where do you go for that? And the librarians should be experts in helping patrons with that information. But it's a way to access knowledge and information in an age-appropriate way.
That was Toby Barr running for the Zone 1 seat on the Moscow School Board. His opponent, three-term incumbent Jim Frenzel, also answered the question on school libraries.
I first would like to say that I have complete confidence in the librarians that we have in the Moscow School District. They're trained professionals. I feel like they know how to pick age-appropriate material. And if there's any concerns about reading material, I think that's a conversation between the parent and the child. It's not my role as an elected official to decide what one person's child can read and what they can't read. As far as the role of librarians and the libraries, I guess libraries, which was the actual question, I view it as an opportunity to expand your horizons, gain more knowledge. I mean, it used to be where you just went and looked stuff up and read books, but nowadays, throughout the state, librarians have sort of modernized, and some of them have maker spaces, sound areas where kids can record podcasts or make videos. I mean, they've really expanded the types of services that they're offering to the students in the district. And I think that's a wonderful thing.
That was Zone 1 school board candidate Jim Frenzel. The candidates for the Zone 3 seat on the Moscow School Board are incumbent Dulcie Kirsting Lark and challenger Gay Lynn Clyde. Clyde said she got a degree in veterinary medicine at Washington State University and then met and married a fifth-generation farmer on the Palouse. Zone 3 includes part of the south section of Moscow east of Main Street, plus a large rural section south, southeast, and east of the city, extending to Ede Road and the Blaine Schoolhouse to the south, two-thirds of the way to Troy to the east, and to Robinson Park Road to the north. Clyde said during her opening statement she was running to implement House Bill 163 in the district, the parental rights bill, which the legislature passed and Governor Brad Little signed this year.
As a potential school board member, I want to help implement the new parental rights bill, HB 163, that was just enacted this summer.
House Bill 163 requires school districts write a policy that outlines standards for selecting and accessing school library materials, including how materials will be shelved and labeled by age group or grade level, a process for district parents and guardians to challenge materials, and a process for parents and guardians to restrict their child's access to materials. The bill also prohibits school libraries to provide materials that are, quote, harmful to minors, unquote, which the law defines as pictures, images, graphic image files, or other visual depictions that appeal to a prurient interest in nudity, sex, or excretion, depicts or describes sexual acts, or includes a lewd exhibition of genitalia, and lacks literary, artistic, political, or scientific value to minors. Under the new law, each school board in the state must introduce the policy during an open public meeting and give patrons 30 days to share testimony and written comment on it. Clyde referred to House Bill 163 as the Parental Rights Bill. In addition to the section on school libraries, the bill requires school districts to give parents access to education and health records, requires parental consent for students' well-being surveys, and ensures reasonable access for parents to visit a school. Here's Clyde's response to the question about the role of school libraries at last night's forum.
If you're a parent and you are aware of certain materials that are available in our current high school libraries, I think you would be appalled. With the enactment of the House Bill 163, I will disagree just a little bit with Jim on this. Is that I'm just going to read you a little bit from this. Parents, this is the bill that's in law. Parents have the legal right to academic accommodations, which includes a process by which parents may learn about the course studies, review learning materials, and supplemental educational materials, which includes library materials. There must be a process by which parents who object to a learning material may withdraw their child from the activity, class, or program. The parents are the primary stakeholders. So I know I'm not quite answering the question. I believe everything that's been said to an extent, that libraries are where our kids are supposed to go learn. They can go look up, you know, how our government works, how to cook, how sky's the limit. There are certain materials in our schools right now that parents need to be aware of, and it is our legal obligation at the school level to provide that those materials are, so that parents can make decisions of what their children can see, read, and things like that.
That was Zone 3 Moscow School Board candidate Gay Lynn Clyde. Clyde's opponent, Dulcie Kirsting Lark, says the former trustee in Zone 3's seat, Kim Campbell, asked her to apply for the school board when she stepped down. Kirsting Lark has been on the school board since December of last year and has worked with the Latah County Parks and Recreation Commission, the Humane Society, and the Lions Club. She said she currently works in a library.
Full disclosure, I work in a library, so I'm very pro-library. And what do I think the role is, like folks up here? It's educational, but everything is about the education of our students when we're in the school system. But it's not always about the education of looking something up to complete an essay. Sometimes it's about learning about yourself, because the growth that you go through from 5 to 18 years old is about more than just the book learning that you do. It's about the growth of your person. I fully respect the authority that parents have to determine what their children can and cannot read. And the great thing is that there is already the opportunity to contact a librarian in the school your child attends and say, please do not check this book out to my child. I know about it. I don't want them to read it. And the librarians will respect that. I toured the elementary schools and the high school last spring, and I asked every librarian if they had had any complaints, and they all said, not from any parents. So I think we should think about where issues regarding books are coming from. I think a young person also needs to be taught how to responsibly consume information, and that is part of a parental responsibility. And so I hear a lot about parental rights, but rights is the opposite side of the coin to responsibility, and this is the opportunity for parents to talk to their students about what they value and why they shouldn't be checking a book out. The last thing I'll say is, as a board member, I I know what would happen if a book is banned from the library. There would be half of the parents outside cheering, and there would be half who were equally as angry that it had been censored. We live in a community that has very mixed views, and so that is part of the school board's job, is to understand we serve a multitude of views, and that's why there is such good policy already about reviewing content in our libraries.
That was Moscow School Board member Dulcie Kirsting-Lark. KRFP will be airing more from the Moscow League of Women Voters School Board Candidates Forum in upcoming newscasts. The other contested race for the Moscow School Board this year is between incumbent Don Fazio and challenger Jim Gray for the Zone 4 seat. Those two candidates did not participate in last night's forum. The winners in the November 7th school board elections will serve on the board with trustees Ken Fonts from Zone 2 and Brian Kennedy from Zone 5. Fonts and Kennedy have 2 years remaining in their terms. Candidates must live in the zones they represent, and voters can only cast ballots in this year's election in Zones 1, 3, and 4. Zone 4, represented by Don Fazio, takes up a major chunk of the southern part of the city of Moscow, extending south to West Palouse River Drive and including almost all of the University of Idaho campus. Maps of the school board zones are available at the Moscow School District 281 website.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by Hotchins Drug and Hobby of 307 South Main Street in Moscow. Hotchins features a pharmacy, educational toys, and hobbies. Hotchins also sells and services hearing aids. You can call Hotchins at 208-882-5536.
As a dad, you probably taught your son how to hit a baseball, but have you taught him what not to hit? Teach him early that all violence against women is wrong. For tips, visit endabuse.org, brought to you by the Family Violence Prevention Fund, the Waite Institute for Violence Prevention, and Ad Council.
And you're tuned in to the Friday edition of the KRFP Evening Report here on KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse. We're going to continue with more from the Moscow League of Women Voters Candidates Forum for Moscow School Board Candidates. Once again, the candidates are Cody Barr for Zone 1 and incumbent Jim Frenzel for Zone 1. And for Zone 3, the two candidates are Galen Clyde and Dulcie Kirsting-Lark, who's also an incumbent. We'll now go to the opening statements and the first two questions from last night's forum.
My name's Cody Barr, and I'm running for Board of Trustees in Moscow School District Zone 1. I've been married to my lovely wife for 16 years, and I have 4 kids. I'm a software engineer, and I work from home, where I'm able to be present in our Moscow community daily. My family and I moved here just a little over a year ago from Connecticut, where I had served on the school board in our previous district, and I really enjoyed it. But I didn't have any immediate plans to get involved again. However, after discovering that there was a real desire in the community for a change in leadership on the board, that my zone was up for re-election, and that there was no one interested in running against a 12-year incumbent, I made the decision to run. I really did enjoy my time on the board in Connecticut and had a lot of interesting and fulfilling experiences, but the one thing that really made the job hard was not having a lot of support. I received occasional opinions and feedback from parents and teachers, but few people were really interested in digging into the complexities of running a school district and helping work toward solutions to real problems. That's not the case here in Moscow. My campaign team includes 2 members who work at the high school, a recently retired paraprofessional, and a number of parents who have provided valuable guidance on the issues unique to our community. Many of them have also supported my campaign financially. I'm fairly new to Moscow, but I think that should be viewed as a strength. I can bring a unique perspective to the school board, having a fresh set of eyes. School board members can't be experts in everything, but the best school board members know how to find and rely on the expertise of others. And that's what I intend to do, to rely on the expertise of both parents and teachers who know this district best, but have for some time now experienced their concerns go unaddressed. I'd like to be the change that Moscow is looking for in their school board, and I hope to earn your vote tonight. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Cody. Jim?
Jim Frenzel. incumbent for Zone 1.
Thank you very much, Cody. So as Cody mentioned, I've been on the school board now for 12 years. I've lived in the community for 33 years, teaching at the University of Idaho. And all three of my children went through the Moscow School District, elementary and all the way through to the high school. I've also served in the Moscow School District as a volunteer for the last 13 years with the Moscow Mentor Program. And if you have an opportunity to participate, that would be great. So I first ran for school board 12 years ago because I passionately believed that every child deserves the best possible education that the community can provide, regardless of their individual circumstances. And I felt that public education was the best way to meet that goal. Fast forward through 12 years of meetings, and I'm running again. And the reason is my passion and my confidence in public education hasn't changed one bit. What has changed is the climate. And so I think what's needed is to move forward and continue what we have is a unified board of trustees working together with all constituents. So families, all employees, teachers, staff, administration, and the community at large to ensure that we're able to provide the quality education that we've enjoyed in the past.
Gay Lynn Clyde for Zone 3.
Perfect. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Cody. My name is Galen Clyde, and I am running for the Moscow School District Board of Trustees Zone 3. I've lived on the Palouse for about 30 years. I received my bachelor degree and my doctorate of veterinary medicine from Washington State University. And after graduation, I met and married a fifth-generational Palouse farmer here, so ended up staying. Over the past 20 years, we've raised both of our children here in the Moscow School District. My son graduated 2 years from 2 years ago from Moscow High School, and my daughter is still in the high school. I've had a good perspective on the education here in Moscow, what has worked well, and what could be improved. I've been involved with many sporting events from middle school to high school, and we've also been passionate about the implementation of the FFA program at the high school. I'm a firm believer in community service. I have served on many boards and councils in an effort to serve the community. As a potential school board member, I want to help implement the new parental rights bill, HB 163, that was just enacted this summer. I'm a big advocate of financial literacy bill that was also passed this summer. It's House Bill 92. I'd love to help expand the career technology education for our high schoolers here. We have a big need for careers for students getting out of high school that may or may not be wanting to go on to a four-year degree. Career technology education will allow that for that to happen. I'd like to be a part of increasing communication between parents, teachers, administration, and the community. I appreciate everyone coming out tonight, and I look forward for an insightful forum tonight.
Thank you, Galen.
Dulcie Kirsting-Lark, incumbent for Zone 3.
Thank you so much to the League of Women Voters for organizing this forum. It's a really wonderful opportunity. My name's Dulcie Kirsting-Lark, and I have lived in Moscow for about a decade. I'm one of those people that arrived here for school, stayed for a job, and fell in love with this community, which I know is a story for many. When I moved here, I was taking a job with a nonprofit organization, and I worked there for about a decade and only recently moved to the University of Idaho. But in that process, I really got to know a lot about the community and how active it is. And pretty quickly, people started asking if I wanted to help, and that was a great way to get to know the community. And I was able to work with organizations that lifted up causes I really care about, the Lions Club, the Latah County Parks and Rec Commission, the Humane Society, and of course the League of Women Voters. In part because I was active in the community, I was approached last fall to consider applying for the vacancy on the Moscow School Board. Former holder of that seat, Kim Campbell, asked me if I might apply. And, you know, I had my son in 2020, and I've got this three-year-old now, and I feel really invested in the future of Moscow's public schools. I'm a huge supporter and advocate of public schools, a proud product of public schools. And I saw that this was an opportunity I could give back to something that I really cared about. So I applied and was appointed to that seat in December of 2022. And for the last 10 months, I've been drinking from the fire hose of knowledge that is school board policy and state board of ed policy and all of those things. I've really enjoyed what I've learned, and I would really like to continue to serve in this capacity. And so thank you, and I welcome your questions this evening.
Thank you, Dulcie. We're going to pass the mic to Jim. So we're going to rotate who goes first so that one person doesn't always have to be on the spot first. So, Jim, what do you think are the biggest challenges facing the Moscow School District?
Jim Frenzel, incumbent for Zone 1.
I think clearly that everyone's in agreement that facilities are probably our biggest problem. And it is very difficult, as you may know, to construct a building in Idaho, a school building in Idaho, because the state doesn't provide any financial support. So all the costs are borne by the taxpayers. So for those of you who've lived here long enough, you may remember that back in 2005, we tried to pass a bond election to build a new high school. And unfortunately, I was not on the board then. We weren't able to draw enough support throughout the community to get the required 67%. And in thinking about it and thinking about the question that might come up, I realized that it really takes a number of different things. I mean, first of all, everyone has to be in agreement on what is the need. Is there a need? What is going to be the scope of the project? What will be the cost of the project? Where will the school be located? And then finally, I lost my train of thought about what the other one is. But anyway, so pulling all those people together and getting them all in agreement is what's going to be very, very difficult. Now, fortunately, our new superintendent is very interested in reaching out and meeting all the members of the community to try and pull together teams, as well as local industry, to see if there's any way we can partner to develop some new facilities, particularly for BoTech. So that would be the main one. But as the Surgeon General has mentioned, the pandemic didn't do our students any favors. So we're also facing concerns about learning loss, anxiety, and the district has made progress in developing particular programs to address both of those. Some of that with the help of community members that have applied for grants to help fund summer school to deal with the learning loss. So those are really my two big ones. I mean, our finances, I think we manage them quite well. Oh, stop. Okay.
Thank you, Jim.
We manage well.
All right. Gaylin, your turn. Biggest issues facing the
Gaylin Clyde for Zone 3.
Moscow School District. Great.
Thank you. So there's two areas that I feel that are general challenges for not only our local but nationally. And the first starts with a low student-to-teacher ratio. I feel like this is a vital to the successful learning environment and teacher retention. Low student-teacher retention ratio allows for individual attention to all students, student accountability, and overall teacher satisfaction. School boards and districts need to look at population demographics. We are growing. We need to estimate future class sizes and prioritize funding to hire more teachers and develop strategic plans for classrooms and for infrastructure to accommodate those future needs. Infrastructure. I think we can all agree that infrastructure is a huge rabbit hole of issues. One of our youngest buildings here in Moscow is over 60 years old. I believe that we are spending upwards of about $1 million a year on repairs and maintenance. Let's all sink that in, $1 million a year. The Moscow taxpayers have one of the highest levies in the state at 40% of the school budget.
We must have more efficiency of the district level for spending. School boards need to have a vision and a plan to address skyrocketing maintenance issues and with no tangible improvements of what we currently have. The school board needs to think outside the box. As Jim indicated, we can't count on these levies. It's a supermajority. I think we need to look at potentially consolidation of our schools, land sales to fund these infrastructures, donations, savings, and look at the local businesses to help reduce the cost of our infrastructure needs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Galen. Dulcie
Kirsting-Lark, incumbent for Zone 3.
At the risk of being a broken record, facilities is what I hear people talking about. Facilities is what is very evident. I don't know about you, but the last time I was in the high school, I find it very hard to navigate because it's several buildings that are pieced together. And I am a historian and an appreciator of historic architecture, but we have far too historic of educational buildings in our district. And so that is the number one problem. And I think we can be distracted by issues that are in the national spotlight that really distract us from the need to address the facilities. And that will mean that we will have to pass a bond. And I think there's a lot of creative ways that we can think about public-private partnerships, particularly when it comes to CTE sorts of programs. But in the end, these are public schools, and they will need to be funded with public dollars. And that will mean that we'll have to come to some agreements as a community. And so that brings me really to what I think is our largest issue, which is that we have a lot of division in our community about how we feel. But public schools have the opportunity to bring us back together because public schools are overwhelmingly popular amongst all demographics of people. The majority of Idahoans attend public school. And so we should be reinvesting in these community schools that provide for our next generation of leadership.
Thank you, Dulcie. Cody, your turn.
Cody Barr for Zone 1.
Biggest challenges.
Biggest challenges, thank you. I'll put my plug in there for facilities, too. I recently went and toured the high school with one of the teachers who works there, and one of the most striking things that I saw there was how small the lunchroom was, and I had to come to find out that many students either leave campus or they have to eat in their cars. And then the worst of it that I heard was that some students even have to eat on the hallway floors. I don't think any student should have to eat on the floor. So for sure, the high school is a problem, needs to be addressed. I came from a district that was aggressively taxed, and it was devastating to the community. And one of the attractions to Moscow was really the taxes. Interestingly enough, though, I learned from a local citizen that Moscow's schools are apparently funded by approximately 45% are funded by local levy versus state funds, which was surprising to me. And he's also done some number crunching and estimates that approximately $1 million or so per year could be saved if we had a new, more efficient building and weren't wasting lots of money maintaining existing facilities. So rather than going the bond and levy route, would like to see us find a way to work within our current budget to innovatively address those growing concerns. Was that a stop?
No.
Okay. The other thing, too, that is part of my campaign, a major issue at the schools, in particular the high school, is the prevalence of graphic sexual literature in the library. And I think it's something that needs to be addressed. It is being addressed by, I know, committees, but if the committees there fail to act, then the board will be responsible for that.
All right. Thank you, Cody. So we'll start with Galen for the next question. So you've all talked about what you think the current issues are, the challenges, but is there one, or what one are you passionate about that motivated you to run for school board?
Gaylin Clyde for Zone 3.
Do I just have to say one?
No, it can be several. Excellent. What motivated you to run for school board?
Yeah, so having had two children that just went through, I work full-time, so easy for people to say, I don't want to get involved. But I'm passionate about several things, and farming and agricultural are big parts of our lives. And part of that passion, I'd like to see children with career technology education expansion. There are a lot of jobs out there that need to be filled. You can go around our communities, around the nation. We need more people in a career technology type of pathway for their careers. So culinary arts. Gritman is clamoring for medical associates, veterinary technicians. I'm a veterinarian. We constantly need a lot of these positions filled. And our high school can help fill those pipelines for us. We have Schweitzer now, and I was just talking to Jenny before. They're talking about a culinary arts CTE here, which would be wonderful. The other is the parental rights bill, and I think this is huge. I'm very proud of Idaho in being forthcoming with house bills and legislation to help empower parents. Again, as a busy parent, I don't have a whole lot of time to oversee my child's education, and we need an efficient way of parents to know what their children are being taught, and I think the parental rights bill will help us with that. The other is financial literacy. Our household, we are very financially conservative people, and again, I think that's really important that kids know how to balance a budget, how to know about interest rates. That can be taught from K through 12. So those are the things that I'm very passionate about, and that would be the end.
All right. Thank you, Gaylin. Dulcie?
Dulcie Kirsting-Lark, incumbent for Zone 3.
As I mentioned, I had my son in 2020, and I was introduced to the extreme obstacle course that is childcare. And really, early childhood education is my passion. I've learned a lot in the last 3 years about how foundational the very first years of a child's education are. We're very lucky in Moscow to have all-day kindergarten, and we've had it for quite some time, and that's because our community invested in it. The state didn't fund it. We decided that this was important for our kids. And not only is it important to get them off on the right foot for their for literacy, but also their social and emotional skills. And I think that it was really important to me. The person who stepped off of the board and whose position I stepped into last fall, she was the only person on the board with young children. And I thought it was really valuable to have somebody whose perspective was at the beginning of their trajectory with the Moscow School District. And I would really like to continue to bring that passion for advocating for our youngest kids. I know it's really exciting to talk about a high school, and we desperately need it. But I toured Russell last week. And Russell Elementary is in dire need. It just makes me really sad that is where kids are living their formative years of elementary. They're going to carry those memories with them. And so we really need to be investing in our elementary schools. And we need to make sure that we've got those low teacher ratios. And that means that we've got to invest in staff retention. Part of staff retention is treating people with young families with respect. And so I think that is also part of the reason I wanted to be part of the school board, was to advocate for parents with young kids who have a lot of unique needs right now.
Thank you, Dulcie. Can we pass the mic to Cody?
Cody Barr for Zone 1.
So I'm hoping it comes as no surprise to anybody who's been anywhere close to Facebook that my wife and I we actually homeschool our children. I bring it up because the question was what attracts you to the office, and really it's our family's natural interest in education and educational philosophy that really drove an interest in getting involved in the public school board. Let's see here. Two of my kids are in the audience right now. They're a little older. They're about 10 years old. And they we teach them about local government and about civil service. So we're literally what's happening right now is why I'm running, to teach them how you know, how this process works. And let's see here. As a homeschooling parent, my wife and I, we have examined and assessed for countless hours a number of different types of curriculum, which is something, it's a skill that I had to put into practice when I served on the school board in our previous district. And I'm hoping to exercise those skills again here with our current school board. The other thing that interested me in getting running specifically here in Moscow, again, not to beat the drum here, but I came to find out that there were certain books, and this issue was brought to me by somebody else, but we found that there were certain books here in the library that I knew weren't even in our school library in Connecticut, so I thought for sure they wouldn't be here in an Idaho school library, but found that to be the case. So another reason why I decided to run.
Jim Frenzel, incumbent for Zone 1.
Thank you. So I'm going to answer this a little bit differently, and that is that as a member of the Board of Trustees, I'm only one vote out of five. And so in general, based on my 12 years of training, it's best if you don't come in with a particular agenda trying to fix anything, and instead you're all working together to try and make the school district the best it can. So I didn't run again because I have a particular issue that I want to fix. I mean, the Moscow School District is very well run. Five national merit semifinalists, a blue ribbon school, Department of Education, district-wide accreditation. The Moscow School District is working quite well, and I ran because I want to continue that.
You're listening to a portion of the Moscow League of Women Voters Candidates Forum for Moscow School Board Candidates held last night at the 1912 Center. We're going to continue with one more question on tonight's broadcast, and then we'll play the first half hour or so of the Moscow League of Women Voters Candidates Forums for Moscow City Council Candidates, which was held Wednesday at the 1912 Center. We'll be back in a moment.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors, including Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street, at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tiedye-everything.com.
This is Eric Gilbert from Finn Riggins. You're listening to KRFP Moscow. It's Radio Free Moscow. It's community radio. It's an asset you can't replace. Please support it.
Dulcie, you're going to be first for the next question. It's actually a good segue to this next question. If elected, what would you hope would be the key accomplishments that you would see over your term on the school board?
Dulcie Kirsting Lark, incumbent for Zone 3.
Thank you for the question, Lauren. Rome was not built in a day, as they say. I don't know how long it would take to pass a bond. I don't know how long it would take to really get going on a significant building project. I would love to think 4 years from now we would be really far down that path of a new high school or reinvested in our elementary schools. For goodness sakes, I hope we have improved HVAC systems in our elementary schools where the classrooms get to be 80 or 85 degrees in the summertime. When class begins in August. Those are certainly things I would love to see. I also, I echo what Jim said, that we are a high-performing district, but COVID learning loss was real, and we continue to address the challenges that came from 2020 and 2021. So if you take a look at the State Board of Education's Moscow report card, you will see that Idaho outperforms every district in our region. But that doesn't mean that we don't have room for growth. And I know that our teachers are really conscious about addressing our dips in math in particular that came during our isolation periods. So I would really love to see that rebound. I would also like to see our graduation rate rebound. So our graduation rate for seniors took a little dip. And I think if we can be really concerted in our efforts to address students' needs, some of which are social and emotional anxiety, some of it is just, they missed out on critical lessons. Our teachers are so skilled at placing one piece in front of the other. And so we need to make sure that we're investing in kids' remedial learning.
All right. Thank you. Cody?
Cody Barr for Zone 1.
So again, mentioning facilities, one of the things that I would like to see done, regardless of whether or not we get a bond passed here, is there are plenty of citizens who want to have the schools repaired because they're tired of wasting money in maintaining old facilities. So regardless of whether or not we pass a bond, I think we should get these folks in a room together so that we can come up with an idea about how to creatively consolidate our schools in some way and work towards building new efficient facilities with what we have currently on the budget. So facilities is one. Another one related to the books. I think a really good compromise for the folks who have an issue with this is, and really it speaks to parents who are wavering in their trust for the district. I think it's important for us to make sure that parents are reassured that we're doing everything that we can to keep their kids safe and protect them from harmful materials. So I think a good solution to the books in the library would be some sort of rating system. You know, if there are books in there that are really intended for adults, then we should rate them as such. And when children check them out, when minors check them out, parents should be notified. I think that would be a good compromise. Again, I've talked to a number of parents as I've been campaigning and heard a number of stories of parents who pulled their kids out of school because of bullying. Parents don't feel like they're being listened to. And I think we need to redouble our efforts to rebuild that trust.
Thank you, Cody. Jim?
Jim Frenzel, incumbent for Zone 1.
Thank you. So what I'd love to see is replacing our two oldest schools. In order to do that, though, the fourth thing that I forgot to include is the timing of the bond election. So in order to maintain small classroom sizes as well as retain teachers by paying them, attempting to pay them what they're worth, we're now down to 42% of local property tax supporting our general budget. I serve on both the negotiating team, the joint negotiating team with the teachers once a year. We negotiate their salary every year, as well as the audit committee. So I have a pretty good understanding of how much money is actually available, and there is not enough money to build a new school. But the board is well aware of the challenges, and there have been ongoing discussions, with the current board for the past several years on how can we best leverage our assets, including the possibility of buying new land to plan for the future. So that's what I would like to see us try and accomplish during my next 4 years on the board.
Thanks, Jim. Gaylin?
Gaylin Clyde for Zone 3.
Thank you. If elected, some key accomplishments that I would like to do over the four-year term that's current. As Dulcie said, she's been learning a lot over the last 9 months, and I can imagine, again, I have not been on the school board, huge learning curve. And again, I want to be a school board member that listens to the establishment of what's been going on and try to learn and listen, because you can't just step into a role and want to change everything. So my goals are to be a good learner once I get on, if I get onto the school board. I would really like to help facilitate increasing parental involvement. I know that's really hard. Again, myself, busy, hard to get parents involved. But I really want, I'm passionate about that. Parents need to be involved. There needs to be transparency. We have a day, in today's day and age, technology is huge. We need to lean into that technology to help us communicate with parents on what is being taught. And I'd like to be a part to help kind of facilitate that. I really would like to help us facilitate teacher retention. It's very hard when a teacher is only here for a year. The next teacher coming in has a huge learning curve of getting the curriculum on board, and the students suffer from that. So if we can pay our teachers, pay our paraprofessionals a living wage, a good wage, because they're teaching our children, we need to retain our teachers and make it very, they want to stay here. Small classroom sizes, I'm a big advocate of that. And look for other sources of funding other than bonds and levies. We are pretty taxed out here. We need to think outside the box in terms of how we can fund the things that we need, the infrastructure, the teacher pay, things like that.
That was Galen Clyde. You're listening to the Moscow League of Women Voters Candidates Forum for candidates running for the Moscow School Board. There are six candidates running for three open seats on the five-seat school board this year, but the league president explained at last night's forum, since one of the candidates for the Zone 4 seat could not appear, the league would try to schedule another forum for the Zone 4 race later. The candidates for that seat are incumbent Don Fazio and challenger Jim Gray, who also ran for mayor of Moscow in 2021. The candidates for Zone 1 are incumbent Jim Frenzel and challenger Cody Barr. And for Zone 3, the candidates are incumbent Dulcie Kirsting Lark and challenger Galen Clyde. Zone 1, which Jim Frenzel represents, includes the part of the city of Moscow north of East D Street and east of North Main Street, plus a small section south of D Street that extends to East 3rd Street near downtown. It also includes part of the rural area of the school district northeast of Moscow, extending to Idler's Rest Road and Moscow Mountain. Zone 3, which is represented by Dulcie Kirsting Lark, includes part of the south section of Moscow, east of Main Street, plus a large rural section to the south, southeast, and east of Moscow, extending to Ede Road and the Blaine Schoolhouse to the south, two-thirds of the way to Troy to the east, and to Robinson Park Road to the north. Zone 4, represented by Don Fazio, takes up a major chunk of the southern part of the Moscow area, extending south to West Palouse River Drive and including almost all of the University of Idaho campus. Maps of the school board zones are available at the Moscow School District 281 website. People living in zones 2 and 5 will not be able to vote in the school board elections this year. The winners win four-year terms on the school board. Coming up, we're going to play a section of the Wednesday Moscow League of Women Voters Candidates Forums for city council candidates. And that's coming up in just a moment, so stay tuned. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Love's Kombucha is proud to support KRFP Radio Free Moscow. Love's Kombucha is a fun, lively, fermented probiotic tea that is craft brewed right here in Moscow. For more information, visit loveskombucha.com.
There are six candidates running for the Moscow City Council this year. There's three open seats on the council, and the top three vote-getters will win four-year terms. The candidates are incumbent City Council member Sandra Kelly, recent University of Idaho political science graduate Nathan Tupper, retired WSU philosophy professor Joe Campbell, former city council candidate and former Board of Adjustment member Evan Holmes, current city council member Drew Davis, and University of Idaho philosophy instructor Bryce Blankenship. Voters can cast ballots for up to three candidates, and the top three vote-getters will join Haley Lewis, Julia Parker, and Gina Tarusio on the council. Lewis, Parker, and Tarusio have 2 years remaining in their terms. Besides this broadcast of the first part of the Moscow League of Women Voters Candidates Forum for City Council Candidates, KRFP will air the entire Moscow League of Women Voters City Council Candidates Forums tomorrow, Saturday, at 4 p.m. Here we go with the opening statements. Bryce Blankenship.
Hello, everyone, and thank you to the League of Women Voters for hosting this event, and thank you all for attending. It's wonderful to see the community come out to be engaged in this candidate forum, to care about the community as we move into the election cycle. So I'm appreciative to see all of you here tonight. As mentioned, my name is Bryce Blankenship. It's also written right there, just in case. And I've been in Moscow for 12 years. I'm a senior instructor teaching philosophy at the University of Idaho. And originally, I'm from Kansas City. So I moved here for graduate school. So I'm also a proud alumnus of the University of Idaho. Go Vandals. And the first time I ever heard about Moscow, Idaho was in 2007. I was working at a camp in New Mexico. And I came up to this person, and he was wearing an Idaho sweatshirt. And I said, "Is that the University of Idaho?" And he said, "Uh-huh." And I said, "Where is that?" And he goes, "Moscow, Idaho." And I remember my answer to this day. I said, "That place sounds made up." And I love thinking back to that story, and I love thinking back to that moment. Because flash forward now to 16 years later, here I am sitting at this candidate forum running for city council for a town that I thought was made up. And I'm running for city council here in this town because I love Moscow. Like I said, I've been here for 12 years, and I love so much about this community. I'm excited to dig in even more. I'm excited to give back to what it's been giving me. And especially as we think about moving into the future, I'm really excited to think about ways to think about sustainable development, ways to think about effective and intentional water management, and also to think about kind of continuing to preserve the integrity of the community. So I look forward to speaking with you all tonight.
Thank you, Bryce. Joe?
I'm Joe Campbell. Thanks to the League of Women Voters and also the speaker series for putting this together. excuse me? The green light is on. I should move it up. So let me tell you a little bit about myself. I just retired. If you include graduate school, I've been teaching for over 30 years, and now I'm not teaching anymore. I have a lot of time on my hands all of a sudden because teaching is a very difficult job. My wife and I have lived here for, we both have two kids who graduated from Moscow. I just finished my ninth co-edited book volume that was just released last year before I retired. And then another interesting thing is I grew up in poverty. It's kind of a complex story. I had a single mother, brother who went to Vietnam, actually. I had a sister who was in a wheelchair. She's still in a wheelchair now. I played football for a while. It starts to sound like Forrest Gump. But along the way, I think I've learned a lot, going from poverty to the opportunities I have now. The key is opportunities. Opportunities are not equal to all people, and I want to make opportunities for education, opportunities for housing, opportunities for employment, opportunities of all kinds. I think that we're a stronger democracy when people have opportunities that kind of pay for themselves. And so I'm interested in helping. And I love this town. I love working with people, and I'd like to continue working as a member of the city council.
Thank you, Joe.
Incumbent Drew Davis.
Hey, thank you. It's good to be here with everybody tonight. There's some familiar faces and a lot of new faces, so it's good to have new friends. As mentioned, I'm Drew Davis. 12 years ago, I moved to Moscow. With every intention, attending the University of Idaho, where I graduate with a bachelor's and master's in architecture. I plan on moving 2 years after it's done. I stuck around because I fell in love with the landscape. More importantly, I fell in love with the people. For me, growing up, I grew up with a lot of like-minded people, which there's nothing wrong with that. But me coming to Moscow, people have different beliefs. And those beliefs, people respect their difference of beliefs. And that's something that I value, and I continue to value as I've been appointed to city council this last year. For me, my training in architecture is what I found important and a perspective that I bring to council. I work a lot with infrastructure in different municipalities across the western United States. Currently, I do a lot of work in Seattle, Washington. I'm very proud that I work on affordable housing projects. For me, this is something that's facing the Palouse. It's facing, more importantly, the city of Moscow. As I look at this and I look at what I've done on a professional level, I have the ability to talk to legislatures in a professional way of how we can, as I've learned things from other states, how we can bring that not only to our state of Idaho, but to Moscow. Most importantly, I'm a dad. I have 4 kids. You can see me in our parks pushing my kids on the swing. I guarantee you, you can hear my kids at the park. And you can find me at the swimming pool on these hot days in the summertime. I love the city services that Moscow provides. And for me, it's really important that we maintain them and we find other ways to bring them to the city of Moscow. Look forward to talking to you tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Drew. Evan?
Hi, my name is Evan Holmes. It is a tremendous pleasure for me to be here and see a lot of familiar faces, most of which I haven't seen because of COVID for several years. Thanks to the League of Women Voters, thanks to Kylie and Lauren. And when I'm on the subject of thanks, I have to say that that comes to mind every day for Nancy and I. We've been here for... We're starting our 35th year here, and gratitude has driven us to a lot of the things we've done and felt about this place. We raised 2 kids here. We've both worked for the school district at times. I have volunteered for a number of city boards and commissions, and most importantly, probably 9 years on the Board of Adjustment appointed by 2 different mayors, one of whom is here tonight. Moscow, to me, has always meant access to opportunity for everyone. And Nancy and I have taken advantage of that and started a couple businesses ourselves. And now my construction business is winding down as I am winding down. And so it frees me to have time, and I certainly have the energy and the desire to serve you in the capacity of a city council member. And we've got some issues coming up. We have the issue, as already mentioned, with affordable housing. We have the cause to think harder about our response to the water problem here with climate change, potentially exacerbating that. And we have to strengthen our connections to the groups that provide support in the community, that partnership that we have in order to meet the growing social needs that I see coming. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
Incumbent Sandra Kelly.
I'm glad Evan stood up first. I was thinking of this earlier. My friend Louise in the back always says, speak into the microphone and stand up so we can see you. I know this because I've gone to a lot of meetings, and I'm thankful for that. So, Louise, thank you for getting us to stand up. What an honor it is to be here with the League of Women Voters. The League is very close to my heart. I've been a member of League for several years, and that's really what got me going with the non-political process of politics. And I'm so thankful for that, for all the work they do. And it truly is humbling to be here with the League. So thank you for that. My name is Sandra Kelly, and I'm excited to run for another term. I've been on council for 4 years, and it's been a humbling experience. It's truly been an honor to serve all of you, and I hope you will allow me to do that again. I continue to bring experience to the job, not just through the 4 years at city council, but my entire background from being a sports writer here in Moscow to going back to school and becoming an AmeriCorps VISTA volunteer and serving in that capacity to helping different political organizations, serving on boards, many boards, and serving on commissions to learn about city work, and really just trying to be a public servant in the best ways possible. And to that, to me, that means serving. I do love to serve, and I love to talk to people, and I love to try and find solutions to problems. There are always going to be problems out there. Absolutely, there's some water issues going on, and I'm hoping that more questions come up because I think there is some headway being made there. I also love the parks, and you will see myself and my favorite 5-year-old neighbor and probably the world's best dog, Beatrice Bean, who will also not be quiet, but who is delightful. I'm so grateful for our parks and all that they do. I adore Moscow. I adore the eclecticness that it has. I want to keep pushing for diversity and understanding. To just take care of each other out there, and that's what we need to do. This is a big, lovely, amazing city, and I want to keep it that way. And we have work to do, and we can do it. And I've just been grateful to be a part of that. So thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you, Sandra.
And Nathan Tupper.
Please, Nathan.
Thank you, everyone, and especially thank you to the League of Women Voters. Thank you for hosting this and moderating this event. This is very exciting for me. I don't know if you can tell, but I'm the youngest person at the table right now, and it's very exciting to be the youngest person here. I've gotten so much support for being so young and doing this. But a little bit about myself. I originally came from the Boise area, Meridian specifically, and I came up here for college about 5 years ago. I started out in psychology, and I took a little bit to figure out what I wanted to do with myself, as every young person does, but I settled on political science, which I finished my bachelor's in this spring, and I'm just finishing out my minor in economics this fall. I am so happy to be here in Moscow. I've loved every single second that I've been here. I was here over the pandemic, and I'm so excited to continue to serve in the capacity that I can. And I'm excited to give the fresh perspective that I think the city council needs from its younger voters. That especially is my big point. I want to be the kind of person that gives a perspective that is unique to its youth, because I feel like that is missing in the city. A couple of things about myself. I joined the Idaho Army National Guard in 2018. I'm currently a sergeant, and my specialty is in religious backgrounds. I am a bodyguard, but most importantly, I make sure that soldiers of any faith background can practice their religion no matter what it is, no matter what disagreements I have with it. My job is to make sure that people can do what they need to do. And I want to bring that onto the city council too. I want to ensure the freedoms that the American Constitution gives us, and I want to bring that to you, the citizens of Moscow. Thank you for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Nathan. If you would pass that down. So what we're going to do is we're not going to start at the very end. We're going to move the beginning person. So, Joe, you're going to be first, and then the next time we'll move it down again. All right? So, yeah, so that one person's not always first, right? Okay. So some of you have addressed the next question, but I'm going to ask it anyway because not all of you did address it. And for those of you that did address it, maybe you can unpack it a little bit more. So this question was sent to us by email. And it's, what do you see as some of the biggest problems that Moscow faces today, and how would you seek to address it as a member of the city council? So, Joe, you go first.
Joe Campbell.
Interestingly, when I've been walking around talking to people, one issue that has come up is trees. I know that there's a tree commission. I tried to go to the meeting yesterday. There was nobody there. Pullman, I think, right now has to get rid of a whole bunch of trees. And actually, one of the people that came up to me said, one person mentioned that, but trees is a relatively minor problem. I think housing is a huge problem. Another issue that people have come up to talk to me about, I had one woman come up and tell me that, you know, she's been here with her family trying to find a house. Actually, we're empty nesters, and it's difficult for us to sell our house, even though it's too large, because we can't find another place to rent that would give us, you know, would be equally affordable. So I think that this is something that affects people of all ages and all income backgrounds, housing. And then another thing that I think I want to talk about is just the Boy, I'm really messing this thing up. But I do think that housing is one of the key issues, and I think it's something that we could deal with. Another thing, I went to – this is sort of thinking long term, but I'm really interested in restorative justice. I went to a program with the Human Rights Commission the other night. I think that that's something that we could work into various forms of community affairs, and something we should look into also. Right. Thank you. Sorry for
Thank you, Joe. It's always hard to be the first one, isn't it? Drew, do you want me to repeat the question, or are you okay with it?
Sure, that'd be great. Thank you.
Okay. So what do you see as some of the biggest problems Moscow faces today, and how would you seek to address those problems as a member of the city council?
Incumbent Drew Davis.
Well, that's a great question, and I think there's we've all seen problems, and we've all faced problems in our city. From my perspective, from being on planning and zoning and being on council this last year, we've all felt the tension of difference of belief. We all have our individual beliefs that we hold dear to us. For me, I don't want to change your beliefs. I don't want you to change your neighbor's beliefs. I want us, our beliefs, to grow us together, and I know that's possible. How I want to do that, and how I've been doing that, is we need to lead with compassion. I'm going to lead with compassion, as I've done. I think we need to understand people. And it's okay that someone believes something different than you, but we can't let our differences become battle lines. We see this all the time, and I think compassion goes a long way in our community. For me, again, I mentioned it, but of course, I'm a building nerd, and anything with the infrastructure, I'm going to talk about it. But that being said, again, housing is really critical. Having shelter, people that don't have that, we've seen this in our community, and that's unfortunate. As we go home tonight, I think we should all be grateful for what we have. But how we can solve this, I think there's a variety of ways. Again, I've talked about how I understand the built environment. I can talk to the legislature. We can work on ways for Idaho, but what we can also do on the private sector is look for private, public-private partnerships, also known as P3s. I think as we engage in different aspects, we can bring these to the table, and again, we can find things along the way. I know I have the ability to have these hard conversations, and but again, nothing can replace what you can do on a personal level. If you know someone's having a hard time, I think as a community, we need to step up. We need to help these people. Policy is important, but personal accountability and helping our neighbors is also critical. Thank you.
Thank you, Drew. Evan, do you want me to repeat the question, or you got it? You're good?
Yeah, I can go.
Evan Holmes.
As they said, affordable housing is a big thing on my mind and of people I talk to. There's ripple effects from that as people go into housing and devote a bigger percentage of their income to meeting house payments and taxes. There's less money for retail, so we can suffer some losses that way, and they'll also become less supportive of property taxes. Those ripple effects can play out in ways we don't like, and so I think the city council has to increase their or strengthen their relationships with private entities like Family Promise, like the Affordable Housing Trust and things like that to meet the potentially growing needs of those that are crunched by the housing thing. And in the meantime, City Council and working with the county could go into area of impact or similar and try to have more zoning that would allow for manufactured home type of developments with smaller lots that would allow for planned use developments where you might put more structures on lots than you normally would. We could allow for zero lot line development in some areas like Tiempo Commons did. And so once again, you get a little higher density of housing in the same amount of land, because in the immediate future, we have to work with the land that's available. And then I also have concerns, as Joe mentioned, about climate change potentially affecting our shade trees, and also that morphs into the never-ending concern about our aquifer and our water supply, and I think we need to begin funding what would eventually be the solution to that, even though we don't know specifically what it is, except that it would be expensive. And so there's three big things that come to mind immediately. A thing I throw out there is also the ability to help people age in place. And thank you much.
Thank you, Evan. Sandra?
Thank you, Lauren.
Repeat the question.
No, I think we're good.
Incumbent Sandra Kelly.
You know, one of the hardest things is there are a lot of poor people out there. I have had the privilege and honor and the sadness of being able to work with the multitude of food banks in the Palouse region. I'm on the board of Inland Oasis, which holds the Westside Food Pantry, and it's grown and grown and grown, which we're grateful for. When I was at Washington State University, one of my jobs ended up being starting what is now the Cougar Food Pantry because students didn't have enough food. I moved to the University of Idaho just over a year ago, and one of my jobs there is to run the Vandal Food Pantry. And I get over 20 students a day needing food, and we get adults looking for food, and we get a variety of people looking for food. And it just is a ripple effect. I'm really grateful that Drew talked about the public and private partnerships. I do hope we can to increase on those. We need things bigger than Family Promise, and I love them a lot. Volunteered there. They're great. But we need bigger than that. We need bigger than the Affordable Housing Trust. We need to find ways to find people places to live, because if people don't have a place to live, they're couch surfing, they're living in cars, or they're trying to find hovels. So that's an issue, and it's one that really gets swept under the rug because generally we try to be a happy place. But that is an issue. I also think we do look to the other things that are critical. Water. I mean, water will be – I know it's going to come up later, so I'm going to save my little stump on water. But that's always there. It's always looking at us. I think we also have to think about our aging infrastructure. You know, one of the things that worries me the most are clay sewer pipes, right? I have nightmares about our clay pipes. I really do. Like, oh no, what happens? How can we fix those? We need to get those fixed. I do have nightmares about it. And we also need just to have a vibrant downtown. I love our downtown, but it needs some energy. And it costs money, and really I want people to eat before we have to worry about that. But it's a variety of things, and that's what council is great about. It's a great way to have the multitude of things come up. We talk about them with departments, we talk about them within our groups, and then we vote on those things, and that's what we're prepping for, and that's why this is so important.
Thank you, Sandra. Nathan?
Nathan Tupper.
I guess the biggest issue for me that I've seen in the past few years of me being here, this city is constantly at war with itself, is what I've seen. And I want to be the kind of candidate on city council that brings healing and builds bridges between the different diverse communities in this city. I constantly see camps of people bicker and go on fights about the most ridiculous things that end up having no impact on how we live our lives. I want to be the kind of city council member that pushes this community to be a single community. Unite us under the fact that we all live here. We are all together, and we have to live life together without dealing with the idiocies that come with life. Now, I think everybody else on this stage has talked about housing, and that is very important to me, but I'm going to talk about something that's actually equally important to me, and that is being citizen-centered. I think most times politicians have a very good and accurate reputation of being distant from their citizens. I do not want to be the kind of city councilman that is distant from the citizenry, but rather be someone that is active in the community. I want to go out and have conversations with the citizens, with business owners, with the homeless, with the people that need it most. That's very important, not just to me as an individual, but frankly to the city. We are all here together. We need each other to survive, and we need each other to thrive. I want to facilitate that as a city councilman. Another big problem for me, I would say, is the water crisis. I hope and pray every single day that we do not run out of water. It is a big deal to me. I want to make public and private cooperations to make sure that our city continues to have water, electricity, and all utilities it needs to thrive. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bryce?
Bryce Blankenship.
I like this standing business, too. It kind of mirrors my feel in the classroom, so it feels nice to actually see you all. So this is what I look like for those in the back. As it relates to the question at hand, the two primary areas that I think Moscow should be concerned about, and as we can kind of address them moving forward, as has been stated, is aquifer and water management. And one thing that I'm really encouraged but also very intentional about paying attention to the conversation surrounding water use and aquifer management is all the various stakeholders at play, right? When we can think about that in terms of Moscow, Pullman, Latah, Whitman, Idaho, Washington, I think it's really important for all of us to kind of pay really close attention to maybe pay really close attention to how we can think about intentional decisions moving forward with regards to the potential diminishing aquifer that we all, you know, benefit from on a daily basis. And so I'm excited to work with organizations throughout the Palouse, and I recently attended the Palouse Basin Aquifer Committee workshop about 2 weeks ago at the Best Western to be involved in those conversations. And it was really meaningful to hear about some of the potential alternatives that we would have to explore down the line. And being part of those conversations as a city councilor is tantamount, right? Like that is, I think, one of the roles of a city councilor is to be involved in those conversations, listening to those that might know more than you, and being able to effectively, again, make decisions that reflect the problem at hand. And then second, as has been discussed, is access to affordable housing. And I think that Moscow is clearly not getting smaller, and we all recognize that. We all kind of have probably our own thoughts about that. And so how do we, again, manage that effectively with regards to zoning issues, with regards to thinking about more creative incentives for access to affordable housing as it relates to, again, Moscow moving into the future? So thank you.
Thank you, Bryce. So you've all touched on things that we have questions about. And you've talked about them in a more general way. So we're going to get into the weeds a little bit because some of the questions get into the weeds. And, Drew, you're going to be the first one to address it. So water, I'm going to read this. It's a long question. The groundwater supply in the Palouse Basin is declining. Water experts and policymakers are considering several water supply alternatives to sustain local communities. Among possible scenarios is a proposal to pump water up to Moscow from the Lower Granite Dam pool near Hawaii Canyon on the Snake River. What do you think about that? And let me just add, what do you think about other alternatives that may have been proposed?
Incumbent Drew Davis.
Thank you. That is a long question, but I'm ready for it. I brought notes. When I was going to grad school, I had the opportunity to work in the CRC, the Center for Resilient Communities, where I did research with two really talented professors that study water across our nation. The area of impact that we did with the National Science Foundation was the Snake River Aquifer around Twin Falls area for geography. I recognize it's not here. There's a couple of key things I learned from that in a year. While doing research, I brought stakeholders and scientists together. I'm not going to pretend. I'm going to be very transparent. I'm not a hydrologist. I'm not a geologist. But I am a citizen here. And the thing that we need and needs to happen is we need to bring these talented people together that have the expertise. And I understand that it is declining. And I understand that there's been solutions. But bringing people together and talking about it is really important in facilitating that conversation. I've done it in the past. I'm going to do it again. In the terms of options that we've talked about, and I know there's been a lot of talk recently, literally in the last 2 weeks about this. I grew up in southern Idaho where we pump water out of the Snake River to feed our fields of water. It's been a solution. I don't know if that's a great solution, to be quite honest with you. I know it is one. I think a solution is capturing the water that we have here on Moscow Mountain through our streams. There's a lot of volume that moves through our little streams here. You'd be surprised. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. I want to capture that. I want to create a reservoir. Those are things that I find. That's a solution that's important to me. But I know there's other people that are making decisions, but that's something that I feel is a better alternative. That's all I have. Thank you.
All right. Great. Thank you. Evan, do you want me to repeat the question?
No, I'm good.
Evan Holmes.
The question was about pumping water from Washington to here, and like all of you, I'm willing to entertain the notion of any solution that works that we can afford. That raises a red flag to me, that particular one, because as in southern Idaho, they know you run into water rights issues. You get into the whole question of who actually owns the water. And, you know, we may be able to buy water for a while. You wonder with changing climate if there's less snowpack in the places that provide that water, if all the water that is in those rivers will already be spoken for. So I have to say that eventually we would have to impound water either through cisterns or a reservoir or something like that to meet our needs. And there's also the possibility of changing our building codes to allow, if the state would allow it, gray water collection so that each household in town, especially newly built ones, would require less water to operate on a day-to-day basis. So it's a combination of things, but we're going to run into water right issues before we get it all done.
Thank you, Evan. Sandra?
Incumbent Sandra Kelly.
Thank you. We are going to run into water rights issue before it's all done, but those water right issues are going to come up with almost every plan that we have, which is tough. Recently, I serve on the Palouse Basin Aquifer Committee and have had the chance to go to their monthly meetings and workshops. And true, there's no easy solution. The happy thoughts on this are, however, while the aquifer is declining, we have about 50 years or more worth of water. So it's not like day after tomorrow it's going to go dry. It doesn't mean go out and water all your yards and go crazy. That is not what I'm saying, right? But we can breathe a little bit and try to figure out some good, solid solutions. Looking at the opportunities that Avista has given and what they're trying to pledge, possibly pumping out from the Snake River isn't the worst solution. We look at climate change and how is that going to affect the snowmelt on Moscow Mountain? Will that allow the streams to continue? We don't know. That is a real gray area. But what we would take out of the Snake River is not that great. So I don't know if that's the best solution, but that's one they're really looking at. And they're so committed to looking at that, they're actually now moving a little bit forward on this and forward on a couple other plans, but to actually start working on those water rights issues. This is not a new thing to PBAC. They know water rights are an issue. We already work within two states, and just transporting water back and forth over across the boundaries is hard. And then when you have to talk to different counties and work with the Nez Perce tribe, it does get complicated, and folks are working on that. Oddly, 4 years ago, I was not at all optimistic about what we were looking at in our water situation. But now, after working with folks and going to more workshops and being an active part of it and not being afraid to ask what I always think of are the dumb questions, I feel much better about where we're at. I can't tell you what the best one is, but I can say that pumping it is not as crazy as it sounded to me before, and I'd love to talk to you more about that now or at another time.
Thank you, Sandra. Nathan?
Nathan Tupper.
Well, I will tell you what. I am not worried. I am going to be very hardworking about the water crisis, but I'm not worried about our city one bit because I know we are all tenacious people. We are people that are going to work hard to make sure that we can thrive here. I'm not worried about us one bit. However, the question was specifically about pumping from Washington. I am more in favor of looking at Idahoan resources for pumping water up into our city, mainly because I want Idaho and I want us as citizens to be more in charge of this than interstate agencies would be. Avista, I think, is going to have a lot of really good solutions for this if we push this specific way of thinking about it. But this comes down to being citizen-centered. I think if we push for things that we have control over, we can solve this crisis together as a community. Because what it comes down to is how we, the people, solve this. It is our tax dollars that are going to be paying for whatever project that is put forward. And so pushing for the least expensive but most effective option is going to be what's best. I am in favor of drawing water from other Idahoan sources, whether it's from the Snake River or from up north. As long as it's from Idaho, as long as it's from less expensive resources, that is what I'm in favor of.
All right. Thank you. Bryce.
Bryce Blankenship.
Thank you for the question. And as has mentioned, and I appreciate the weeds question. As a philosopher, I love diving into stuff, and especially when it comes to issues that are so important, such as water and such as access to water. This clearly matters deeply to the whole community, and as I said, kind of the greater Palouse region. And so I think that one thing that we need to consider and one way that we can address some of these issues surrounding water is, again, listening to the experts. As a philosopher, I too am not a hydrologist, right? But clearly living in this town and living in this community, we have experts. We have people that know the science, that know the effective management. And as a city councilor, acting as a conduit between those experts and the members of the community. And also being active in those conversations to think through effective and intentional decisions when it comes to water. As it relates to pumping from the Snake River, again, there's complexities with that, as has been discussed, but also there are other alternatives that we can explore, from whether that be reservoir creation, whether that be from other runoff areas in our state, maybe across the border. There's always kind of alternatives to explore. And in that space, in thinking about water, I also think that there's something that Moscow has done, from the best of my knowledge, of encouraging citizens to also consider how they use water from their own personal use, right? And the city has some incentives, and I always mispronounce this word, but I think it's gyroscaping, it starts with an X, which essentially is kind of reducing one's own water usage for one's own yard, one's own landscape. And so just, again, kind of thinking about things on our own individual level, but also on the collective level, I think is really important. And luckily, living in this community and living with people that care very deeply about this issue, both at present and for years to come, we will kind of find, I think, really meaningful and effective solutions to this, because it matters very deeply.
Thank you, Bryce. Joe?
Thank you. I did a little research today, actually, on the water situation. So I have the solution. No, I'm only kidding. But I was just amazed at how large the Palouse groundwater basin is. I mean, just to give you a sense, it goes all the way about 8 miles north of Palouse and all the way about 5 miles north of the Snake River, all the way down there. But nonetheless, I think we have to explore all these options, because the fact is we use more water than we're collecting. So it is decreasing. I do want to point out, one of the things I found out is that water usage has decreased per capita in the last 70 years, 30% in the Pullman WSU area and 43% in the Moscow U of I area. I've talked to Tom Lamar about this, and his efforts, he does a lot in these terms, but his and other people's efforts actually has reduced water consumption. But again, it's just not enough. We need to explore other resources. I think some of the concerns that Evan has are important. Certainly we should add incentives. What I like, though, is, you know, I think the new way of doing politics is trying to work within the will of the people. Right, and the fact that we did decline water usage somehow shows that there is some potential here. I think we have a lot of potential ways of pursuing ways of conserving water, both you know, through conservation efforts and through exploring other avenues, getting water from other resources. So, thank you.
All right, thanks, Joe.
And you've been listening to a portion of the Moscow League of Women Voters Candidates Forum for candidates running for Moscow City Council, which was held Wednesday night at the 1912 Center. We'll be broadcasting the entire forum tomorrow afternoon at 4 p.m. That's Saturday at 4 right here on KRFP. It lasts about an hour and a half. The candidates are incumbent City Council member Sandra Kelly, recent University of Idaho political science graduate Nathan Tupper, retired WSU philosophy professor Joe Campbell, former City Council candidate and former Board of Adjustment member Evan Holmes, current City Council member Drew Davis, and University of Idaho philosophy instructor Bryce Blankenship. Voters can cast ballots for up to three candidates, and the top three vote-getters will join Haley Lewis, Julia Parker, and Gina Taruccio on the council. Lewis, Parker, and Taruccio have 2 years remaining in their terms. In addition to the League of Women Voters candidates forums, KRFP has interviewed all six candidates, and you can listen to those interviews by going to last week's evening reports on the KRFP.org website. Also, we plan to have the first of two Moscow City Council candidate call-in forums Wednesday at 6:30. That's Wednesday, October 11th at 6:30 here on KRFP. We've invited the first three in alphabetical order to appear on that show. So that will be Joe Campbell, Bryce Blankenship, and Drew Davis. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, it'll be clear through Sunday night. Highs 76 tomorrow and Sunday, lows 48 Saturday and Sunday night. 20% chance of rain in the afternoon on Monday, mostly sunny, high 73, and 90% chance of rain both Monday night and Tuesday, with a low of 45 and a high of 57 on Tuesday. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can also adopt a DJ, there's a PayPal option, and there's a Patreon button also. Also on the website, you can stream KRFP and listen to archives of any show on KRFP during the last 2 weeks. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. We've got music coming up, including the Dan Solo Show starting at 8. So stay tuned for all that. KRFP, Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is made possible in part by support from KRFP members and
John's Alley Tavern, Moscow's home of live music. John's Alley is located at 114 East 6th Street in downtown Moscow.